Buddha, or Buddha Gautama, also known as Shakyamuni Buddha, was a great spiritual master from ancient India. Born as Prince Siddhartha Gautama in 5th century BC, he would have naturally inherited the vast wealth of a kingdom. However, the prince one day left the palace in search of spiritual knowledge. After years of contemplative seeking, the Buddha attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree. He then shared the merits of his practice by providing a method for other sentient beings to be freed from the cycle of death and rebirth. The rich treasury of Buddha's spiritual teachings on universal truths are studied and revered to this day for their deep wisdom and compassion. Today, we would like to share with you the sage teachings of the Buddha, excerpts of Chapter 4 of the Sutra of the Lotus of the Wonderful Dharma, also known as the Lotus Sutra. Last episode, we learned that when the disciples of the Buddha heard of Shariputra's future attainment of Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, or the highest perfection, they become enlightened to their own potential. Now, in this sutra, the Buddha expounds only the one vehicle, and in the past, when in the presence of the Bodhisattvas, he dispersed the voice-hearers as those who delight in a lesser doctrine, the Buddha was in fact employing the great vehicle to teach and convert us. Therefore, we say that though originally we had no mind to covet or seek such a thing, now the great treasure of the Dharma King has come to us of its own accord. It is something that the sons of the Buddha have a right to acquire, and now they have acquired all of it. In this episode, Mahakasyapa poetically retold the parable of the wealthy man's long-lost son who had degraded himself to a lowly position in life, as a way to further demonstrate his understanding of the significance of the Buddha's teaching.
Immediately, he instructed a messenger to hurry after him and bring him back. The impoverished son, crying out in terror, sank to the ground in distress. "This man has seized me and is surely going to put me to death. To think that my search for food and clothing should bring me to this." The rich man knew that his son was ignorant and self-abasing.
"He will never believe my words, will never believe I am his father." So he employed an expedient means, sending some other men to the son, a one-eyed man, another puny and unkempt, completely lacking in imposing appearance, saying, "Speak to him and tell him I will employ him to remove excrement and filth, and will pay him twice the regular wage." When the impoverished son heard this, he was delighted and came with the messengers and worked to clear away excrement and filth and clean the rooms of the house.
From the window, the rich man would constantly observe his son, thinking how his son was ignorant and self-abasing and delighted in such menial labor. At such times, the rich man would put on dirty, ragged clothing, take in hand a utensil for removing excrement, and go to where his son was, using this expedient means to approach him, encouraging him to work diligently. "I have increased your wages and given you oil to rub on your feet. I will see that you have plenty to eat and drink, mats and bedding that are thick and warm."
At times, he would speak severely, "You must work hard." Or again, he will say in a gentle voice, "You are like a son to me." The rich man, being wise, gradually permitted his son to come and go in the house. After 20 years had passed, he put him in charge of household affairs, showing him his gold, silver, pearls, crystal, and other things that were handed out or gathered in, so that he would understand all about them. Though the son continued to live outside the gate, sleeping in a hut of grass, for he looked upon himself as poor, thinking, "None of these things are mine."
The father knew that his son's outlook was gradually becoming broader and more magnanimous, and wishing to hand over his wealth and goods, he called together his relatives, the king of the country and the high ministers, the noblemen and householders. In the presence of this great assembly, he declared, "This is my son who abandoned me and wandered abroad for a period of 50 years. Since I found him again, 20 years have gone by. Long ago, in such and such a city, when I lost my son, I travelled all around searching for him, until eventually I came here."
All that I possess, my house and people, I hand over entirely to him, so he may do with them as he wishes. The son thought now in the past he had been poor, humble and self-abasing in outlook. But now he had received from his father this huge bequest of rare treasures, along with the father's house and all his wealth and goods. He was filled with great joy, having gained what he had never had before. The Buddha too is like this. He knows our fondness for the petty, and so he never told us you can attain Buddhahood.
Instead, he explained to us how we could become free of outflows, carry out the lesser vehicle, and be voice hearer disciples. Then the Buddha commanded us to preach the Supreme Way and explain that those who practice this will be able to attain Buddhahood. We received the Buddha's teaching and for the sake of the great Bodhisattvas made use of causes and conditions, various smiles and parables, a variety of words and phrases to preach the unsurpassed way.
When the sons of the Buddha heard the Dharma or true teaching through us, day and night they pondered, diligently and with effort practicing it. At the time, the Buddha bestowed prophecies on them, saying, "In a future existence, you will be able to attain Buddhahood." The various Buddhas, in their Dharma of the secret storehouse, set forth the true facts for the sake of Bodhisattvas alone. It is not for our sake that they expound the true essentials.
The case is like that of the impoverished son who was able to approach his father. Though he knew of his father's possessions, at heart he had no longing to appropriate them. Thus, although we preached the treasure storehouse of the Dharma of the Buddha, we did not seek to attain it ourselves, and in this way our case is similar. We sought to wipe out what was within ourselves, believing that was sufficient. We understood only this one concern and knew nothing of other matters. Though we might hear of purifying the Buddha lands, of teaching and converting living beings, we took no delight in such things.
Why is this? Because all phenomena are uniformly empty, tranquil, without birth, without extinction, without bigness, without smallness, without outflows, without action. And when one ponders in this way, one can feel no delight or joy. Through the long night, with regard to the Buddha wisdom, we were without greed, without attachment, without any desire to possess it.
We believed that with regard to the Dharma, we possessed the ultimate. Through the long night, we practiced the Dharma of emptiness, gaining release from the threefold world and its burden of suffering and care. We dwelt in our final existence, in the Nirvana, or the highest paradise, of remainder. Through the teaching and conversion of the Buddha, we gained a way that was not vain, and in doing so, we repaid the debt we owed to the Buddha's kindness. Although for the sake of the Buddha's sons, we preached the Dharma of the Bodhisattva, urging them to seek the Buddha way. Yet we ourselves never aspired to that Dharma or true teaching. We were thus abandoned by our guide and teacher because he had observed what was in our minds.
From the first, he never encouraged us or spoke to us of true benefit. He was like the rich man who knew that his son's ambitions were lowly and who used the power of expedient means to soften and mold his son's mind so that later he could entrust to him all his wealth and treasure. The Buddha is like this, resorting to a rare course of action. Knowing that some have a fondness for the petty, he uses the power of expedient means to mold and temper their minds, and only then teach them the great wisdom.
Today we have gained what we never had before. What we previously never hoped for has now come to us of itself. We are like the impoverished son who gained immeasurable treasure. World-honored one, now we have gained the way, gained its fruit. Through the Dharma of no outflows, we have gained the undefiled eye. Through the long night, we observed the pure precepts of the Buddha, and today, for the first time, we have gained the fruit, the recompense. In the Dharma, or true teaching, of the Dharma King, we have long carried out Brahma practices. Now we obtain the state of no outflows, the great unsurpassed fruit.
Now, we have become voice hearers in truth, for we will take the voice of the Buddha way and cause it to be heard by all. Now, we have become true arhats, for everywhere among the heavenly and human beings, devils and brahmas of the various worlds, we deserve to receive offerings. The world-honored one, in his great mercy, makes use of a rare thing, in pity and compassion, teaching and converting, bringing benefit to us. In numberless millions of kalpas, or cycles of ages, who could ever repay him?
Though we offer him our hands and feet, bow our heads in respectful obeisance, and present all manner of offerings, none of us could repay him. Though we lift him on the crown of our heads, bear him on our two shoulders for kalpas or cycle of ages. Numerous as Ganges sands, reverence him with all our hearts. Though we come with delicate foods, with countless jeweled robes, with articles of bedding, various kinds of potions and medicines, with sandalwood and all kinds of rare gems, construct memorial towers and spread the ground with jeweled robes, though we were to do all this by way of offering for kalpas or cycle of ages. Numerous as Ganges sands, still we could not repay him.
The Buddhas possess rarely known, immeasurable, boundless, unimaginable great transcendental powers. Free of outflows, free of action, these kings of the doctrines, for the sake of the humble and lowly, exercise patience in these matters. To common mortals, attached to appearances, they preach in accordance with what is appropriate. With regard to the Dharma or true teaching, the Buddhas are able to exercise complete freedom. They understand the various desires and joys of living beings, as well as their aims and abilities, and can adjust to what they are capable of, employing innumerable similes to expound the Dharma or true teachings for them.
Utilizing the good roots laid down by living beings in previous existences, distinguishing between those whose roots are mature and those whose roots are not yet mature, they exercise various calculation, discriminations and perceptions, and then take the one vehicle way, and in accordance with what is appropriate, preach it as three.
Peace-loving viewers, thank you for joining us for today's episode of Between Master and Disciples. Planet Earth, our loving home, is coming up next, right after Noteworthy News. So please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television. May you and your loved ones be always embraced in the soothing and healing melodies of heaven.
For more details, please visit www.suprememastertv.com/BMD.